from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Prop 13, the only statewide measure on the March 3rd ballot, would invest $15 billion into rebuilding California's schools, and that includes updating facilities and developing new construction projects for K-12. Those who support Prop 13 point to the deteriorating state of our public school buildings and the need to invest in education, and others argue that the ballot measure will raise taxes, and they question the decision to double the limit on what a school district can borrow. Joining us to take your questions and to break down what we should make of Prop 13, and this is not the traditional Prop 13, it just has that name, is Steve Glaser, California State Senator of 7th Senate District, represents the Yes on Prop 13 campaign. Senator Glaser, good to have you back with us on Forum. Welcome.
Always good to be on your show.
And we want to welcome also John Kupal, who is president of the Howard Davis Taxpayers Association. Good to have you. The Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. Good to have you back with us, John. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Pleased to be here.
And let me begin, Senator, with you. And let me begin with just a quick question about why this couldn't have gone through the legislature. Why is it essentially up for the citizens?
Well, when we borrow money in this way under state law, it has to be something that the people of California weigh in on. So that's why it's on the ballot.
Okay, well, let's talk about what the people of California are being asked to weigh in on here. This is money that's going to be divided up between public universities and community colleges, as well as K-12, as I said. And it really is pretty ambitious. I mean, we're talking about also money that's going to be vested in neighborhoods and communities that need it very badly, that have we're talking about low-income schools particularly getting help here, aren't we?
We are. Michael, let me give you some context for this. When we talk about priorities of state government, two things certainly come to mind quickly. One is the education of our youth, and the second is safety. And on the issue of education, we fund it two different ways. The cost in the classroom, like teacher expenses, those expenses are paid for by the state for the most part. But in terms of the facilities, the classrooms themselves, the physical facilities, funding for those come out of a partnership. The state puts up money, and the locals through local ballot measures can decide whether they want to put up money to rehabilitate or modernize their facilities. So Prop 13 is that element of the capital funding. It would provide the state share, the state match, to join with local communities if they want to rehabilitate or improve their school facilities. And that's the partnership that Prop 13 speaks of. And as you mentioned in the opening, there's some priorities that are set in this measure. Priorities given to projects that address fire and life safety issues, seismic concerns, deferred maintenance. So a priority list is set up. And if there's partnerships with the local school boards, school communities, this funding would allow that good work to happen.
You're also talking about a lot of other things like building science labs and upgrading technology and actually renovating playgrounds. There's a lot here, and certainly people who are interested in education, interested in the future of our California kids are going to be certainly impressed by what can be covered here. But most school districts are going to need to pass a local facilities bond and then apply for a matching estate funds, aren't they?
That is correct, but it gives priorities to districts that are struggling, districts that have financial issues in the classroom and out. So again, it focuses on trying to help those that are most in need. And as you mentioned, the bond is comprehensive. It covers K-12. It covers the community colleges, the University of California, the California State Universities. It's a comprehensive measure across our whole educational spectrum that can really provide resources for laboratories at the higher education level, down to the library for our kids in elementary school.
And we should mention $500 million has been set aside for charter schools and another $500 million for tech education. John Kupal, you have a problem with this, and I think the problem is mainly because where the money's coming from, isn't it?
Well, we know where the money's coming from. It's going to be paid out of the state's general fund, and that is cause for concern. California's debt service ratio right now is fairly manageable, but that's only because of our vibrant economy. However, we already have $158 billion of outstanding bonds and authorized unissued bonds, and debt service right now is the fastest growing item within the state's general fund. We absolutely agree with Senator Glaser that schools are a top priority in California. There's no debate about that. But with a $22 billion cumulative surplus, Our first question is, why would we want to pay bondholders and the costly interest costs of this of another bond measure when we have the capacity to take care of many of the rehabilitations, particularly the critical rehabilitation on fire safety and those kinds of things, with existing funds?
So excuse me, John, you're saying pay as you go and use many funds from things like budget surplus and rainy day?
Correct. You know, Jerry Brown's father, Pat Brown, when he was governor, paid for much of California's infrastructure on a pay-as-you-go basis. And if you've got the money to do it, which we do at this point in time, it makes much more sense to do it that way than to incur the amount of cost, which will be $600 million in interest costs every year for the next 30 years. So, again, the debt service costs are very high. There is an appropriate place for bonds. We don't oppose all statewide school bonds. This one seems to be excessive and not well thought out because of its size. And, of course, our bigger concern, of course, is the local debt caps.
Let me get a response from you, Steve Glazer.
Well, I think that John's attention to debt is a good one. It's something that we pay a lot of attention to in the legislature. And in this case, I think he's acknowledged that our debt levels are manageable. Michael, it wasn't too long ago when I was working for Jerry Brown, and when he came in as governor in 2011, we had conversations about the enormous debt that the state of California had incurred, and we've eliminated much of that. In fact, that surplus that Mr. Kripal speaks of speaks to the fiscal responsibility in state government that exists now today. But when you're talking about capital investments, when you want to buy a home, and that home's going to be around for 30, 40, 50 years, it makes sense to take out a mortgage, not just use all of the resources you have in your budget, if you even have them, because you're going to be paying for something that has a shelf life of a long, long time, decades and decades. It's the same issue with our school buildings. They're not going to be there for 3 years and then go away. They're going to be there for a long, long time, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And so it's a prudent investment strategy to borrow and pay it off incrementally, because it's a capital expense, not an operating expense. That's something that you spend and it's done in a single year.
Since we're talking about expenses, I want to go back to you, John Kripal, and ask about the construction costs, because there's been some concern. I don't know if it's the Harvard Jarvis people who have put this concern out there about local districts having to use union labor, that would indeed even cost more. Is that of concern to you?
Yeah, there are a number of studies out there that indicate that the mandatory use of project labor agreements can add anywhere from 25% to 30% to the cost of construction of schools. There's a lot of cost drivers in school construction, which is why on a square footage basis, the cost to build a school in California is so much higher than virtually all other states. But the mandatory use of project labor agreements is costly. We understand, and it's certainly one of the reasons why the trade unions support this particular bond, as do the Builders Association, because they get some relief from developer fees. But I think the question we have to ask ourselves is this particular bond, in the manner in which it's being implemented, in the best interest of taxpayers? We think the answer is no. Again, it's not a mandatory, it is a preference for project labor agreements. And of course, there's going to be tremendous, tremendous pressure to make sure that all the construction projects are built exclusively with union labor.
Well, let's get you, our listeners, involved in this. I know many of you would like to weigh in, and invite you to do that now. Or if you have a question, you can join us now as well. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. The number again for your calls, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org. This is Election 2020. We're beginning here talking about Prop 13. It would provide $15 billion to fix the schools, and it will be on your ballot. It is, let's put it this way, the largest school board measure in California history, and interested in hearing the thoughts of you, our listeners. Again, you can join us. We're talking to John Kripal, who is president of the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, and Steve Glazer, who is California State Senator with Senate District, with 7th Senate District, and he also is the representative for the Yes on Prop 13 campaign. Here's a tweet from Michael. These bonds have been on the ballot ever since I can remember, and yet it is never enough. And you say what to that, Senator?
Say, well, we educate over 6 million school kids in our state, and thousands of schools, and And they deteriorate, and we have issues with seismic safety, and we have issue of lead in the water. And mold, there's lots of things that just don't magically never appear because, you know, everything's perfect. So, yeah, we have to stay up on maintenance. We have to stay up on health and safety issues. We have a big state, big school districts, and a lot of kids that we care about. So,
but you understand the import of that question. I think we've got about, what, $313 million now annual just in interest averaging on bonds? So, a lot of listeners like that Michael who just tweeted are saying, when do we hit the when do we hit the ceiling?
Well, if you think education is our most important priority in the state, Proposition 13 is for you because it forces the state to spend more on our schools. And there's a lot of criticisms that we don't spend enough. So this measure allows us to spend in paying off that bond debt. It's going to allow us to spend over $700 million more for our school kids every year as a requirement of the passage of this measure. I think that's a good thing.
Let me read something from Michael. It says, I'm not sure why the UC system is included in the bond measure. The UC and Cal State system have multiple sources of income, including tuitions, recreation fees, housing fees, parking fees, as well as substantial donor contributions. I worked at UC San Diego, and if a new building was needed, the chancellor and alumni would find the money. Why should they be included? Steve Grazer?
Well, both systems have $16 billion in unfunded obligations for rehabilitation, maintenance, safety concerns on their campuses. Proposition 13 will provide $4 billion of that $16 billion need. But I don't want we have concerns about tuition being too high. And every year we have the debate about whether we should hold down tuition or tuition has to go up and the impact that has on students and their families. So I would rather have the people of California who have invested in our higher education system continue to be the stewards of that system. I don't want our higher education campuses to be the obligation of students and their families only. It's part of what makes California special, our investment that our parents made and our grandparents made into these great higher education institutions. I see it as our obligation to continue that partnership and support them in the need to upgrade and create health and safety issues on the campuses.
All right, I want to bring our callers aboard, and we begin, Tia, with you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Years ago, I voted for the lottery in California for the sole purpose of improving our schools. I don't understand what's happened with that money. Can you explain that?
Actually, let me get to you on that, John Kupal. Your thoughts?
Yes. The lottery was one of many proposed laws that were sold to California voters as being the be-all and end-all that will save education. Remember the ads in favor of the lottery proposition. The reality is, and I think the senator would agree, is that the lottery generates really just a fraction of the state's education budget. It's not that much. Now, it wasn't sold that way.
No, there was all the hype.
Yeah, there was a lot of hype, but the same is true with Prop 98, too, which guaranteed 40% of the state's general fund to education. And it said that will, you know, basically forever provide the money we need. And then, you know, again, with every education measure, they make the same promises. And that's even true with the bonds. Remember, Prop 51 was a $9 billion GO bond to fund schools and community college districts that was approved just back in 2016. So, again, I would agree with the senator. We need a good, efficient capital improvements system. And this particular bond proposal, especially to the extent that it mixes together K-12, community college, and UC, seems to me to be a little bit unusual way to go.
And since he brought up Prop 51, Steve Glazer, can I get you to address that?
And this is a previous bond measure that he's speaking of?
Yeah.
Well, I think, as I mentioned earlier, buildings aren't static. You know, they deteriorate over time. The roof leaks. We find new issues of environmental sensitivity and lead and water. So we have to keep the health and safety issues as current as we possibly can. The threat of earthquakes in new areas of the state that are vulnerable to seismic movement. So we're a living, breathing state, a living, breathing institution, and we have to continue to invest in our classrooms and in our university buildings. So. Is it an expense of our government? Yes, but it's a priority of our government to educate our kids and to do it in a safe manner.
Let me thank Tia for the call and go right to another caller. That's you, Marion. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, thank you. This question is for Senator Glaser. I'm just wondering, you've talked a little bit about some of the different schools, and I'm just wondering how will the money that goes to which schools be decided? You know, essentially, how can we make sure the schools that need it the most are the ones that are actually getting it?
Criteria for that, Steve Glaser?
That's such a good question and a good concern, because that's an important work that we do. It's not just to raise the money, but to make sure the money is spent correctly. There is a process at state government where those who have needs apply. It's a public process, so the school districts around the state can say, we have this need. Here's the justification for it.
It's not the first come, first serve that many people have been very disillusioned and angry about.
That's correct. In fact, in the San Francisco Chronicle's endorsement of Proposition 13, they mentioned how it sets priorities. It makes sure that it's not just who gets in line first, but it's determined based on need and health and safety requirements that are laid out in the measure. So there's a public process with an entity called the State Allocation Board. It sounds very bureaucratic, but it has broad-based representation in a public process to review all those requests, make sure that they set criteria and priorities per the ballot measure on how the money has to be prioritized, and then the allocations are made.
Well, John Kupal, the senator mentioned the Chronicle, which did endorse Prop 13. It was also endorsed by the L.A. Times, but the Mercury News actually rejected it and did an editorial against it. And I wonder about their reasoning and how it squares with your thinking about this. They seem to reason that this will have to have taxes to make up for a shortfall. Taxes, in other words, will be raised.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, why else would you raise the local debt limits? Now, keep in mind that the statewide school bond is repaid out of the state's general fund and does not necessarily come with a new tax increase. However, it does obviously put pressure on the general fund and more pressure to raise taxes. But it's very clear that to provide the matching funds, local school districts must pass their own bonds, bonds that used to require a two-thirds vote, but because of a change in the law, now only require a 55% vote. And those bonds are repaid exclusively by property owners. The thing about the two-thirds vote is that because not all Californians own property, there are a lot of people who had no skin in the game when they voted on school bonds. And that was the beauty of the two-thirds vote. But now that is gone, and now we leave homeowners and other property owners vulnerable to significant increases in property taxes by virtue of the fact that the debt limits are now being increased.
John, I wonder what you say to Steve, who tweets, it would be fiscally irresponsible to use rainy day savings to pay for capital improvements and investments. If we use budget surplus for this now, we set ourselves up to be in real trouble in an economic downturn.
Well, my response to that is you don't have to spend it all at once. If we prioritize the projects, even spending a couple billion dollars a year on a pay-as-you-go basis, you wouldn't have to dig very deep into the surplus. Prioritize the requirements, the things like seismic safety and fire. Those are high priority, and we wonder why they haven't been addressed before. Look, Larry, California has the highest income tax rate in America, the highest state sales tax rate in America, the highest gas tax in America, and the highest corporate tax west of the Mississippi. To be told that we need more and more and more is just, it's really starting to drive some Californians mad, or at least drive them out of state, as we've seen some of the demographic trends.
All right, I have to correct you. My name is Michael, not Larry, but let me get some more callers on here. That's okay. Beverly is next. Beverly, join us.
Oh, good morning. A few minutes ago, the senator drew an analogy between bond funding versus pay-as-you-go and buying a home. And with all due respect, I think that's a false analogy, because when one buys a home, you do balance pay-as-you-go with borrowing.
Steve Glaser.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Prop 13 does. The home is the same as a school building, a classroom. And so the pay-as-you-go is that the debt obligation under Prop 13 is paid for by the state general fund. There's no tax increase. And when you take out a mortgage for your house, you're paying off the mortgage, the principal, and the interest each month, right? You're doing both. But you did it through the appropriate borrowing, because that house is a capital need and it's not something you're going to just use up in a single day. So it's very consistent with what each of us, if you were able to afford to buy a home, do.
I want to read a comment from a listener named David who says, I am all for investing in our schools, but the process for getting into the local schools is maddening. And the fact that schools have been underfunded for a long time affects the quality of the education. So like many parents in San Francisco, I've opted out and go private. While I am in theory all for investing in public education, I'm already out of pocket a mountain of money for private school. I want to remind you, we're talking about election 2020 and Prop 13, which would provide $15 billion to fix schools. Talking with Steve Glazer, California State Senator for the 7th Senate District and representative of the Yes on Prop 13 campaign, and with John Kupal, who is president of the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. And reminder that this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And let me go to more of your calls. Let me go next to Peter in San Francisco. Good morning.
There is a local bond on the March 3rd ballot in San Francisco providing $845 million for City College property renovations. And I'm wondering how much of an overlap is there, how much is provided in the state level for, say, San Francisco community, City College of San Francisco.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Peter. Let me go to you on this, Senator Glazer.
Well, so on the K through 12 issue, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, capital needs in our state, there's a partnership. State money can be combined with local money. So that local measure in San Francisco, you can double the effect, the benefit of it, by passing Proposition 13, because the state will have a fund in which to match those locally generated funds. In the case of San Francisco, it will have a property tax impact. In the case of Prop 13, there is no tax impact. So passing Prop 13 is exactly what you need to if you want to improve San Francisco schools, because you're going to get double your money for the benefit of doing that.
Steve Glazer, can you talk about the incentives for transit-oriented development? Because that's all a part of the package of Prop 13.
Well, as you know, we have a big housing issue in our state. And so what we're trying to do, and so within state government, we have like dual needs. We want to take care of our school kids. And we know we all have to work on affordable housing. So Prop 13 creates an incentive for development within transit to reduce the fees that developers have to pay if they follow the guidelines within Prop 13. So it's meant to combine our mutual interests of improving our schools and yet not creating a cost impact that reduces the ability to build more housing, more affordable housing.
John Kupal, you said earlier that you are a great supporter of education for children. You realize how important it is. At this point, are you saying that because there hasn't been enough check on excessive school spending, that this would be something where that check would have to be brought into play?
Well, I think more education over every more oversight of every aspect of our California educational system is certainly warranted. Much has been written about some of the more dysfunctional school districts, like the LA Unified School District. There are some very well-run school districts in California, and they tend to be from medium-sized cities and smaller communities. But some of the large ones, I'd be very curious, because one of your listeners just brought up the San Francisco, the number of add-ons to the property tax bill in the form of parcel taxes and existing bonds. My recollection is that it's fairly significant in San Francisco, but there are continuing questions about whether or not that money is being well spent. So with respect to the local bonds, there's some oversight with these local bond oversight committees. We're involved with the statewide bond oversight committees, and there are good ways to manage bonds and bad ways to manage bonds, but this particular statewide bond is going to put significantly higher pressure on local property owners, which we do not think is warranted at this time.
All right, let me bring another caller on, and that's you, Matt from San Rafael. Good morning.
Hi. My wife and I are both educators, and we have an elementary school child and a middle school child. I'd love to support this bond measure, but I was a bit dismayed to see that there's inclusion of public funding for charter schools. And I'm strongly opposed to publicly funding charters, and I feel like that's a deal breaker for me. And I wonder what your guests think about that.
Well, let me ask you to address that, Steve Glazer.
Well, I think underscore public. These are public schools. And we have a number of schools in our state that aren't doing well. And and parents who are struggling, what can I do with my child's education when the school is failing? And public charter schools have given them that opportunity to take their child and put them in a public charter school. And that's what they think is the lifeline for the education of their child. And that's law in California today. This measure just says we're going to treat them fairly, that we're not going to treat one more than the other. They're both public schools. But that Prop 13 says that we're going to set aside some money for public charter schools so that their facilities can get the same improvements that other public schools are getting. So it's a fairness requirement. It's not saying I love or I hate public charter schools versus regular public schools. It's saying that there has to be a fairness element, so an equity. And I think we should not let that distract from the need for our kids to have healthy and safe facilities in which to learn.
I'm wondering, Steve Glazer, if I could go to you with a question from a listener named Trish who wants to know. She says your opening explanation, that is mine, is appreciated, that this proposition is unrelated to Prop 13. So many folks have come to revile. Why are propositions not given unique numbers to prevent confusion, Senator?
Well, yeah, it's such a good question because obviously we get it a lot on this particular Prop 13, but there's been others. We had a Prop 13 that dealt with water in the early 2000s. But the system today is you count up to, I think, to 200, and then after you get to 200 propositions, you begin again at the start. And that's a good suggestion. Maybe we should go revisit that. Maybe we shouldn't go back to the beginning, and we can have proposition, 1,025 down the road.
Maybe just start using names like with hurricanes or, proper names for propositions.
Hurricanes, you start with the alphabet. And after you get to Z, you go back to A again. I guess you could have a different first name.
Yeah, you could do it that way. Why not? Patricia writes, what's the relationship between Prop 13 and Schools and Communities First initiative that undoes the corporate benefits from the original Prop 13? If and when that passes, it will provide more funds from corporate taxes than this one does by borrowing from future generations. Steve Glazer, seconds left.
Yeah, completely unrelated. That's strictly a tax issue of how we assess taxes and property taxes. This measure is about the kids, our school kids, our college kids. How do we make sure they have safe, healthy classrooms in which to learn? And from my point of view, it's completely unrelated. You can look at that issue in isolation if it's on the November ballot, decide whether you like it or you don't. This is our attempt to continue the partnership with locals and support our schools at all different levels.
We will have to leave it there. Thank you, Senator Glazer. Thank you, John Kupal. And thank you to our producers, Judy Campbell, Tina Larberg, Ariana Prell, Blanca Torres. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. And our engineer is Danny Bringer. Interns are Michael King and Jameson Weiss. Executive editor is Ethan Lindsay. And our chief content officer is Holly Kernan. Thank you for being a part of this morning's Forum program. There is another hour ahead. Stay tuned. That's next. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.